Welcome to the Context Machine, episode 653. I'm your resident hack writer, Brian Chaffin. You thought I wouldn't mention it. You actually thought I wouldn't mention it.
And I'm your resident guy that
Boy that Scout. You're the Boy Scout.
I shouldn't laugh. Oh, well played. I shouldn't laugh at what Brian says because I only encourage him. I'm Jeff Gamut.
Yeah. Hey, and Jeff.
Hey, Brian. Brian, are you aware we have a website? It's contextmachine.io.
I am. You know how I know that? I've listened to prior episodes.
Wow. That makes one of us.
Right. You can use contextmachine.io to reach out to us, or you can find us on Mastodon at Context Machine, or you can do that. Context Machine on Mastodon.
Yeah. Brian.
Yeah.
Here's another exciting bit of news for you. Our sponsor today is LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to tell you more about them later in the show. We appreciate them as sponsors.
We do. Yeah.
So we do have two, I think, interesting topics. And
I like to think so, too.
I want to really get to the second one. So I'm going to make us wait and talk about the other one first, which is also interesting, but I'm really excited about the second one.
Okay.
I maybe that's... Just skip ahead, folks. That's what I'm saying. we put chapters in here.
Yeah. Okay. So apparently what you're supposed to do is skip ahead to where you see the spot for LinkedIn Jobs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Listen to that and then listen to the second half of the show.
No, but seriously, the first topic is also exciting, but The second one's more of a passion project. But anyway, HomePods with displays, we're getting more rumors. Is that correct? Is that what you were telling me?
That's what I was telling you. And so the deal is that we've been hearing rumors about a HomePod with a display for a while now. So think something like Echo Show kind of product.
Yeah.
That's what people have generally been assuming. And... and there's hints that have been showing up in like tvOS code about this new HomePod. And now there is a leaked photo showing what apparently is going to be part of the display on the new HomePod.
Yeah, it's the new HomePod Steampunk edition.
You know, if it was the HomePod Steampunk,
I'd buy the crap out of that.
Oh yeah, of course you would.
Yeah,
yeah. I'd imagine you'd have at least two in each room.
Yep. Attacked. I feel attacked.
Just seen, Brian. Just seen.
Seen. Anyway, yeah. But it's basically saying that it's there's a guy who apparently probably knows someone that works at one of Apple's suppliers, or is someone who works at a supplier. But
they've got a connection somewhere.
They've got a connection, yeah. And he's basically showing it's supposed to be another display. Blah blah blah. You know, I don't even care about that. What I thought would be really interesting to talk about on this topic is what Apple is telegraphing that they want to do with Siri.
Okay. This is not where I saw you going, but yep. And I'm with you for the ride.
I did just surprise Jeff with that legitimately. So it is undeniable that Apple is probably working on more and various and sundry HomePod devices.
And of course they are, they do the same thing with Macs and iPhones.
And they did the same thing with TVs. The TVs. Do you remember the TVs? The Gene Munster was always telling us that Apple was working on TV, and doubters would be like, oh, no, there's no TV. And then it turns out that Apple was working on TV. I mean, and Apple decided not to do the TV because they decided that there were a couple of things that they couldn't control enough that would let them maintain their lead in the market.
And that's exactly why Apple doesn't make a product.
Right.
When, yeah.
Right. And I am sure, I am personally sure that there is some modicum of truth behind all of these leaks, even the ones from Ming-Chi Wrong Again Quo, that there's a modicum of truth behind it from the standpoint that Apple's working on lots of different things.
Yeah. Brian, I have to derail this for a second.
Yeah.
I believe the assumption most people have is we show up and do this show every week so that I can entertain you. The reality is we're showing up every single week because you entertain me. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I like, so like this we'll have to, can we have a link to the actual tweet from Kasutami?
Kasutami. Yes, I will make sure we have a link to that in the show notes.
Okay. In fact, I just sent you that direct link. And this is the one that shows a display cover that...
It looks like a porthole window.
Yeah. And this is something that would theoretically be on a similar iPod form factor, the HomePod form factor that we already have. And I feel like there's 0% chance this is anything close to a shipping product. I mean, like zero. Like, there's no way that Apple is releasing the HomePod Steampunk Edition.
Yeah, well, based on what we see in the photo, I assume that the parts that make it look all steampunky will be hidden underneath the body.
Yeah, but this thing is just clunky. This seems like a, hey, let's make something and try it out kind of product.
Yeah, sure. I can totally see that. Although, wouldn't it be kind of fun to have a retro future atomic space age HomePod thing?
Yeah, it'd be cool, but that's not what Apple does.
No, it's not.
By the way, I saw on Instagram the Philco, I forget the name of it now, but the Philco TV that was essentially the one that that Fallout did both the TV show and the game based their TVs on. And it was only sold from 58 to 60, and then Philco went out of business. And Philco used to be a really big deal, but they basically got beat in the marketplace. But anyway, it's a really cool device. Apple's not going to be making that. Apple's
no, but it would be kind of cool to see an Apple device with that kind of flair.
Yeah, it would be. But again, that's not what Apple does. So I think what is really the more interesting thing here, rather than speculating on whether or not what, so this is from a Mac Rumors article that that first talked about this tweet with this, you know, picture, and then they rounded up some of the
recent such disdain in your voice, you know, this picture
exactly, and then they rounded up some of the other rumors, including Ming-Chi Wrong Again Quo, what he's saying, and Mark Gurman's, who, by the way, is right far more often than Ming-Chi Wrong Again Quo.
Absolutely.
So Ming-Chi, he said that Apple would release a HomePod with a 7-inch display at some point in 2024, LOL. And someone said there would be like a display or a camera at the end of a robotic arm. I mean, whatever. Like, those specifics
like don't matter. Like the Luxolamp iMac?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, at least I assume. But that's not the interesting thing. The interesting thing to me is, where is Apple wanting to take Siri? Because I don't think we're anywhere near the end of Siri's evolution. I don't think we're any, I think we're barely at the beginning of Siri's evolution. Both from the standpoint
I think you're right.
Of, you know, we talked about this last week, wasn't it? The AI stuff that Apple's doing.
Oh, right. Yeah. I had to think about it for a second.
So,
I mean, that's like a week ago, but yes.
Well, yeah, that's a week and 17 shows for you ago.
I laugh only because it's true.
But where is, like, so one of the things I was thinking about was, I have never longed for a display on my HomePod, because when I give my HomePod commands, I don't think about going and looking at it. I don't want to go look at it. But is that because do I not want to go look at it because it doesn't have a display? Or do I not want to go look at it because Apple's form factor of having a device that just listens and responds is the right approach?
I think there's a third option in there too. And it's that you haven't had an Apple product that has Siri built in that allows you to do the other sort of things that would make the screen useful, like display multiple pieces of information simultaneously. I went to see my calendar and my task list, and I want to be able to watch the remote HomeKit camera that covers my porch so I can see when packages arrive. Also give me the weather and alerts whenever I get messages from specific people, you know, that sort of thing.
And the price of Bitcoin.
Right.
I say that because have you seen those little boxes that can be used to display a constant running stock or crypto price, current price?
Yes.
So I have thought about getting those because Brian, and my point is that that is something that I have already thought about having on a separate device. Mm-hmm. So it would kind of make sense for me to have that on a Siri device too.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the point. I can show them if you ask again.
She's talking back to you, or he, or it, however you define your S lady, but it is talking back to you.
Yes, she was talking back to me. Anyway, I don't know. What was my point?
Your point was that actually, it's what you wanted to do is talk about where you think Apple is taking the
right
lady
product. Not because I know where Apple is taking HomePod / Siri, but more that I'm confident that Apple is taking it somewhere. And I'm also fairly confident that these leaked products with these HomePods with displays is part of that future. And then I strongly suspect that Apple is really trying to figure out how this is going to take shape. And like, is probably not close to having figured it out. They're probably still working on it.
Yeah, I think Apple has a long-term plan for where they would like to see this product take us. But they're also smart enough to know that they can't have a rigid plan. For example, 5 years ago, with the things we were doing with S Lady or any of the other voice control assistant products, I don't think these companies were looking at how the whole LLM product market would fit into this. But they have to be nimble. And so, of course, Apple's like, all right, well, how does this apply to what we're doing? And they're figuring out how that fits in or doesn't. But yeah, I mean, they have a master plan or a master goal.
Yeah, the master goal, certainly. Well, I'm sure they have a master plan, but a master goal in terms of this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, it did just sort of occur to me that Apple has been working on an LLM for years from the standpoint of Apple has described to us needing the large amounts of data to improve Siri, the large amounts of voice interactions from us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm essentially referencing this nonsense about Apple falling behind.
You know, the whole Apple falling behind thing, we've seen this before with other product categories.
Yep, every time.
And yeah, and in some cases, Apple never enters that market, and they're proven to be right. Yep. And other times, they enter it later than other companies.
And change the market.
And then they change the market, yeah. And yet, every single time, we have all of these pundits and bloggers and podcasters and journalists going on about how Apple is falling behind because they haven't done the exact same thing that all the other companies are doing, when that's exactly what Apple never does.
Right.
They don't do the same thing.
Right. I totally agreed.
All right. Well, that's this week's show. I just want to wrap up while I'm ahead.
We can't, though. We still have the other topic. And we have to talk about LinkedIn, too.
Yeah. See, there's so many things to talk about. All right. So keep going.
So I don't know whether it wouldn't surprise me if Apple didn't release this under the HomePod name. But I'm confident that there is something coming out that will be some kind of display-oriented device. That seems pretty inescapable at this point.
I'm going to throw an absolutely harebrained, crazy idea out there that I just came up with.
I'm here for it.
Okay. What if we're thinking about the display completely wrong? What if this is something that links HomePod with Apple TV in a way so that our television becomes the smart display for a HomePod? I know I totally just pulled that out of my butt right there. But as I was thinking about it, I thought, you know, that's actually
Do you have room to put it back up there?
No. It was a big thought. It would be awkward.
Yeah. No. I mean, because Apple, your TV is already a display for Siri, through Apple TV.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and that's true.
Okay, I accept your apology.
I got to go. I hear my mom calling.
All right, so I guess we're not going to really solve this today. It turns out that we don't know for sure what Apple is doing. I thought it would be an interesting discussion, and there you have it.
You know, it's always an interesting discussion, especially because we got to call out that Mark Gurman has the connections and gets a lot of his reports right.
He verifies. That's the thing that Mark has always done since he was a kid. Since he was a kid, like 17 or 18 or 16 years old or whatever, however old he was, when he was working for 9to5 Mac, he always verified his sources. Like a true pro.
Yep. Yeah.
And
I remember when he started writing. And I mean, it was obvious right away that he was going to be one of the breakout writers that went on to big things.
Yeah. And Ming-Chi Kuo doesn't, I mean, that's, he doesn't have to verify anything. I'm not saying that he doesn't verify anything, but I don't feel like he's verifying anything. He doesn't have to. That's not what he gets paid for.
I like the comparison that you have made between Ming-Chi Kuo and DigiTimes.
Oh, okay.
They're probably getting information from a lot of the same sources, and there was a point when DigiTimes
the same would, type of sources,
yeah, same type of sources. But there was a point many years ago when DigiTimes, they'd have the right nuggets of information, and their interpretation would be wrong.
Yeah, their conclusions were often wrong.
Yeah, but then that changed, and a lot of their conclusions are accurate. Whereas Ming-Chi Kuo, he's taking those nuggets and spinning, as you say, tapestries out of them, but they're the wrong tapestries.
Yeah, and it's weird because DigiTimes can't seem to get credit for being right. Seems to be constantly saddled with the reputation of being wrong, despite not being wrong anywhere near as much as they were. And Ming-Chi Kuo seems to always get credit for being right, despite never being right or often being wrong.
We live in a cruel world, Brian.
It drives me nuts. All right, so LinkedIn Jobs.
Yes.
They're sponsoring us. And so LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals that you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking on the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. So hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. That's a clever tagline. LinkedIn knows small businesses are wearing so many hats, might not have the time or resources to hire. I mean, hiring sucks. It's hard. Mm-hmm. It is hard to hire. And the job market remains tight. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. That's an impressive stat. So the thing is, they provide these tools, including, and this is the thing I like to mention because it's very cool, it's the dashboard. It puts all of your open positions, it puts your job descriptions, it puts your candidates, it puts everything right there at your fingertips. And it makes it a lot easier to manage the entire process. And when you can manage the entire process, it makes it easier to get through that process. So you can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow. Thank you, LinkedIn Jobs.
Yep. Thank you, LinkedIn Jobs. They have been a longtime sponsor. We appreciate them greatly, and we'd appreciate it if you check them out. Yes. So, all right.
Brian, I want to sidetrack us for a second.
Oh, good.
Yeah. It's April 19th right now.
Yep.
Everyone knows that.
Having day.
Yeah. Yes.
You'd already forgotten.
Yeah. Well,
it's like you don't even care.
I am such a jerk.
We are six blocks from the having. No, we are four blocks from the having.
Yeah. Well, you've been watching through since before we started recording. All right. Anyhow, but it's about me, and I just wanted to let you know that it's April 19th, and it's been snowing here since yesterday, off and on, and
really?
Right now. Oh, yeah. right now, it just looks like a hardcore winter storm outside right now.
So are you getting snowpack out of this?
Probably not, because it's been warm, you know, like pretty warm leading up to when the weather changed yesterday. But you know, since it's cold and we're supposed to have this through Saturday, maybe we'll have some accumulation by then. But don't worry, Brian, come Sunday, we can be out in our shorts again.
Okay. And the halving I was talking about is,
it's snowing hard,
is the Bitcoin halving, where the block rewards get halved. And that's why it's called the halving. Actually, the last time around, it was called the halvening. And for some reason, this time around, it's being called the halving. I like the halvening. I like the way that sounds. I like the way that feels.
It has kind of a sci-fi fantasy event feel to it when you say the halvening.
So I just sent you a link.
It's like the culling.
Yes.
Or something.
Yes, it does. It does have a very kind of fantasy-like feel. I just sent you a link to mempool.space, which is a tool that essentially lets you check transactions on the Bitcoin network. But if you can pull that up, I want you to look at something.
At the grid of the big box of squares that
are all moving and shifting,
changing.
Yes. So those are potential blocks of transactions. And so what you're seeing is the way that new transactions being added to the queue sort of shift everything around. It's cool. Like I find it. It's mesmerizing.
I think this is what you would have on your HomePod display.
Probably is. And then do you see the one block at the top? We'll put this in the show notes, folks, so you can actually look at this. You won't be able to see this part because it'll have already happened by the time we post the show. But do you see the glowing one?
Have really good imaginations.
Do you see the glowing block at the top? So you've got blocks on the right, which are in purple.
Oh yeah, right on the edge, the purple and magenta. Yep.
Yeah. So those are blocks that have been confirmed on the blockchain. So those transactions, each block holds, like the current one says 2,736 transactions. So it's gotten one confirmation on the blockchain, and that's great. The ones on the left that go from orange to green, depending on how wide your window is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So those are blocks that are waiting to be confirmed. And do you see the fourth one that's kind of glowing?
There's no glowing for me. Sorry.
What browser are you on?
Edge.
Oh my God.
So a Chromium browser.
Okay, anyway, it's glowing. It's cool. At least on Safari. Oh.
Hey, you can roll over these and see stuff. So that's fun.
Huh.
Yeah, all this pop-up data when you roll over each square.
So I'm talking about the very top that has the purple and the orange.
Oh, look, there's one that has kind of a pulsing glow on it. Yes.
How did you miss that?
Because I had scrolled down a little bit to look at mempool Google all, and it's a square full of all the squares.
Yes. That's the coolest. And those
keep moving around.
Yes. But the glowing, the pulsating one was the other one I wanted to show you. Anyway.
Oh.
There it is.
There it is. I'll have a link into this, everyone.
Yeah, for everyone that doesn't care.
And Brian is all hot and bothered about the glowy square. And the giant one just disappeared from the big grid of all the squares.
Yeah, so it got subsumed.
That's what I'm enjoying watching. Just all these little squares keep moving around and changing size. And
yeah, it's super sci-fi looking.
Yeah, I'm sure that they were going for that when they designed it. Holy crap, the whole thing just like massively changed. Wow.
So okay. A new block was confirmed.
Okay.
So now the pulsating one is now three blocks away.
Yep, I see that now, and yeah.
Well, right. So here's the thing I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about one weird trick that Apple could do to make public books, the Books app, better for indie publishers, which I feel would have the benefit of being good for readers of all sorts.
Okay, so what would this one cool trick be?
The one weird trick would be for Apple to offer printed books.
Wait, you mean Apple doesn't?
Well, they do in photo books, right?
Right. But you can't get like a print book. Like,
Nope. It does make sense. Apple doesn't want to be in the Amazon business of warehousing books. I get that. That makes total sense. Yeah, but
there's
sense.
The whole print on demand thing for books.
Right. That's the thing that I think has changed. The rise of indie authors is pronounced and profound.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, what I'm seeing is there is a large swath of indie authors. And when I say large swath, I mean what I feel very strongly is the majority of indie authors who start and stop their thinking about where to publish with Amazon. And this is made worse by Amazon's Kindle Unlimited feature.
I mean, unlimited sounds like pretty cool to me.
Yeah, because you would think that offering anybody unlimited something will only improve quality, right?
Right. Or at least improve volume for authors.
Right. But improving volume doesn't necessarily get you money. Anyway, Kindle Unlimited is... Have we talked about this on the show? I know that you and I have talked about it.
I think we've touched on it in the past, but we haven't gone deep into it.
Kindle Unlimited, you pay $10 a month and you get to download and read whatever you want that is offered on Kindle Unlimited.
All right, so it sounds like a pretty good deal.
For consumers, yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it is part of Amazon's race to the bottom. It is a massive part of Amazon's race to the bottom. And there are a myriad of problems with Kindle Unlimited, but it turns out that when you're offering to let people read everything they can for $10 a month, that authors will spew crap and put it on Kindle Unlimited. So there's lots of AI stuff that's generated stuff that's on Kindle Unlimited. And
oh, I was assuming this would mean that that avid readers can go and find all the content they want and consume as much as they want and be able to do it at a much more affordable price.
Yeah, that's true. But it turns out that when people can get whatever they want for nothing, that means the authors are getting nothing. So with Kindle Unlimited, your $10 goes into a pool. The mm-hmm. number of pages that you read on Kindle Unlimited goes into a pool. The pool of all the other pages read. So if you're an author, the pages of your book that is read is compared to all of the other pages that are read. And you get that percentage of however many people stay subscribed to Kindle Unlimited this month. And that's how much money you get.
That's okay. Okay.
So
there is a much world. Money at all.
Well, there are some authors that actually do pretty well with it, especially authors who can crank out books by the, you know, by the pants load. but it's possible to have a situation where you get, you know, a big increase in the number of pages read, but your percentage of the total pages read doesn't go up. So you actually make less money. That's entirely possible.
All right, that kind of sucks. It sounds like rules rigged, so the house always wins.
Yeah, this is definitely a situation where Amazon's taking its cut off the top, and so they don't care. They just want to move product. They just want to sell subscriptions to Kindle Unlimited. They could not care less about the quality of books. They could not care less about the quality of the writing. They could not care less about the reader experience or the writing experience. Amazon does not care about any of those things. Okay. And I, as I've said in the past, I like quality books. So I don't like things that decrease the quality of the books that I have access to.
One of the things that you've told me, which I don't remember if you said in the monologue you just gave us because I wasn't listening.
that's a fair cop.
Did you mention the thing about you have to distribute exclusively through Kindle Unlimited?
Oh no, I had somehow forgotten about that. To be on Kindle Unlimited, you have to have your book be exclusive to Amazon, which is the most absurd monopoly power abuse of anything. And so, yet Apple, you know, Apple got sued for rigging,
for price fixing. Collusion to price fix.
Yeah. So Kobo also has an unlimited subscription option, but it does not require exclusivity to Kobo, and which makes sense because that would be insane for anyone for an author to want to be exclusive to Kobo because Kobo has no share. Turns out all the share is Amazon's hands. You know, duh. Huh,
how about that?
Yeah, one more block.
All right. So how does Apple fit in?
So Apple, I'm not advocating for Apple to do Books Unlimited. That's not my thing at all. What I would like to see Apple do is offer print on demand books, especially if it could bring the quality to the product that it brought to its photo books.
The photo books are really nice.
They're really good. Really quality. Nice. And they're not expensive. Well, I don't think they're expensive. I'm sure
they're fairly priced for what you get.
Yes, I'm sure that there are people for whom they are expensive. Absolutely, and it's position of privilege for me to say that I don't think they're expensive. But they're really good quality, and even if Apple has to charge a premium compared to currently the print on demand. Books that indie authors can tap are, to my knowledge, Amazon's print-on-demand books, which are fairly good, although you can see through the pages. I don't like that, but whatever. Barnes & Noble, which is also pretty good, and Ingram Spark, which I'm told is pretty good. I'm not signed up through Ingram Spark, so I haven't tested theirs. But basically, Barnes & Noble uses the same printers that Ingram Spark uses. Ingram Spark being the the essentially the indie publishing arm of the Ingram conglomerate.
Okay.
Right. The same Ingram conglomerate that owned like Mac Warehouse and Mac Mall and.
Okay.
And, yep. You know, everything else. They own a lot of things in the distribution business. So.
All right. Question for you. Yep. Since you've clearly done some research on this.
Yes.
I'm so proud of you showing up prepared. Well done, thanks. Sir. Does Kobo do print on demand?
No. No, they're ebooks
only. Okay. Okay. So Kindle and Kobo, ebooks only, and a couple others do ebooks and print on wait. Kobo and iBooks are ebook only. Amazon Kindle and Barnes & Noble are ebook and print on demand.
Yes. Yes, that is true. And I don't think you can distribute ebooks through Ingram Spark. I'm not positive about that, but I don't think you can. But one of the benefits that Ingram Spark offers to indie authors is that libraries and retailers could choose to buy your book.
Okay.
Which they can't do. You know, a library or an independent retailer is not going to be ordering your book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble for what that's worth. Hey, they having just happened.
Yeah.
Just happened.
Oh, your calling just happened. Your half a doodle just happened.
Yes.
Hooray for Brian's half a doodle. I know it's a happening. I'm just being a jerk.
I'm telling someone.
I bet you are. I look forward to the email.
So, no, I didn't send it out my newsletter. just happened. Okay. I had to tell someone else.
All right. So
top men.
So this is an opportunity where Apple could give indie book authors more options for selling their works.
Right. And in particular, Apple could, all right. So there's more background here. Since iBooks came along, which is after the Kindle came along, and I think even the Nook beat Apple, right? Barnes & Noble's Nook was here before iBooks.
That sounds right. I'm not 100% sure, but that sounds right.
And Kobo, you know, Kobo was also a thing before. And there were other various platforms that were out there that are not really relevant or existing anymore. But anyway, my point is that since that has happened, due to be sure, in large part to Amazon's efforts, indie publishing has exploded. There are so many books by indie publishers, and above and beyond, there are also a lot of indie books that are really good quality, which I feel like was not the case for a long time. I feel like a lot of independently published stuff was pretty low quality. And
well, that makes sense though, because you have to get a sense of legitimacy for a new distribution platform, like doing the whole ebook thing for indie authors. And so, sure, at first you're going to get people that dabble, and you'll have a wide range of quality. But then as the sense of legitimacy grows, then you start drawing in a higher percentage of experienced high-quality authors.
Right, and including authors who have, you know, been dropped. Because, you know, at the same time as the rise of the indie authors has happened, the publishing world has contracted, and again, thanks to largely Amazon, and you have a wide variety of mid-list authors and less successful authors who have essentially been forced or chosen to go independent too. So there is a lot of really high quality indie stuff, especially, like, you know, you want to talk about Kindle Unlimited. The romance world is really big on Kindle Unlimited, the erotica world.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is, if I start writing erotica and just throw it on Kindle Unlimited, then I could make some money off that.
Yeah, you could. Yes.
Okay. And since it would be content that I actually don't really care if it has a wide distribution, it wouldn't matter that it's there.
Well,
but then I'd be playing into the whole system.
Yes, you would be playing into the problem that is that the DOJ should really be looking at, which is Amazon's monopoly power. But that's beside the point. That's actually really not my point. My point is that with the rise of indie publishing and the ability to get your book printed on demand and to have that printed book on demand be fairly high quality, this has been a good thing for indie authors. I feel like if Apple offered a higher quality print on demand option for indie authors, mm-hmm. that it could really bring out more indie authors onto the books platform, which would bring more attention, more eyes. It would keep people keep some people at least out of the Amazon exclusive ecosystem.
The fact that Amazon has created an exclusive ecosystem and it doesn't seem to be bothering anyone in authority, to me, just seems weird. Although it shouldn't be weird feeling, because when Apple lost the collusion price fixing case,
or we're talking 10 years ago, right? 10, 12 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So Apple got hammered for that. Amazon had no consequences. And
they were essentially charged. They didn't have consequences because they were never subject to scrutiny.
Not, which was so weird.
Not legal because scrutiny.
They were part of the whole thing. But and so instead we have a situation where the DOJ said, you know what? Not in so many words, but you know what? You get to be a de facto monopoly and do as you please in this market. So, of course, Amazon created Kindle Unlimited as a thing where you sell through them and nowhere else.
Right. And to be clear, you can sell your books on Amazon and not have them be exclusive. You just can't add them to Kindle Unlimited, which I wouldn't do anyway, because I don't want my books just like cheap. I respect my work more than to have it on Kindle Unlimited.
Yeah, I get it. You created a quality product, and if it's going to be a physical product, that should be quality as well.
Kindle Unlimited is ebook only.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm
well, I that makes, of course it is.
Because how else could you have $10 a month and be able to download
right. every and, book that you want? And I was just, see, it all just kind of blended together for me, because the whole premise is, why doesn't Apple create a system where you can sell, where indie authors can sell physical copies of their books?
Right. So, yeah, I guess I was essentially drawing a direct connection between the two. So that's probably on me. But anyway, the point is,
yeah, I'm going to blame you
that the situation today is there are large numbers of indie authors who sell books who are on Kindle, only on Kindle, and don't even think about their about being on Apple or Nook or Kobo or even necessarily Ingram Spark. They don't even think about it because Kindle has Amazon has given them all they need to easily sell their books and has all the market share as like 90% of the market. And so they don't even think about going anywhere else.
You know, on one hand, that sucks. But on the other hand, Amazon has done a really good job of creating a system where authors are feeling like they don't need to go anywhere else, or it doesn't occur to them that they could go somewhere else. So I suppose in that sense, they've done their job really well.
Yeah, they have. And are you trying to draw a comparison between me saying that the DOJ being pissed about iMessage is that they're being pissed about Apple doing their job right?
No, I mean, yes. Yes, that's exactly what I was doing.
Were you?
No. I was just pointing out that from a business standpoint, Amazon executed very well. Don't have to like it, and I don't, but they did execute very well. But it sounds way better when you think I was making the comparison to the whole messages thing, so we're going to go with that.
Okay, that'll work. So anyway, I would love to see Apple offer a high-quality print-on-demand book. I would personally pay there's probably a reason. Well, I'm sure there are a number of reasons why Apple hasn't done this, not least of which is that Apple doesn't really seem to care about books anymore. Not since
DOJ.
Yeah. And I'm actually kind of surprised that they put as much effort into marketing the Books app as they do, because it doesn't really seem like they care about it anymore.
Yeah, that is kind of how it feels. I wonder how many people at this point don't even realize that you can get ebooks from Apple.
Good question. Good question. I don't know the answer to that. But the other possible reason for Apple not doing this is that they decided that they can't offer the kind of quality that they would want to offer in a print to order product at a price that makes any sense. That's mm-hmm. That's very possible. If Apple could figure out how to do that, though, if Apple could figure out how to do a print to order option, what I don't want to see is Apple essentially source out print on demand to the same people that are to Ingram, for instance, because that's what Barnes & Noble is doing. They're using the same printer that Ingram is using for their print to order stuff. Amazon is not. So I would not want to see Apple do that. But what I would like to see is Apple step up the quality, offer print on demand. And I feel like a lot of authors would be more interested in Apple, which would bring more attention, which would bring more share.
I would like that.
Oh, are we at the point where we're just going to speaks first?
I thought we were at the point where you were going to do the outro bumper, so I was staying quiet so you wouldn't be pissed off that I talked over it.
Ah, right. Well, we'll just take Top that men. Out. We'll take that out in post. a great show. That's this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on that or question, you can write us at contextmachinepodcast@gmail.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Dr. Boom, recorded just for this show.
Yeah. Hey, thank you, LinkedIn Jobs, for being here and sponsoring us this week.
Yeah, thanks. We appreciate them. Like I said, they've been a sponsor for a very long time, and we very much appreciate their sponsorship. We would like you to check them out. And let's see here. I'll do this. You wanted to talk.
I could tell. I kept my mouth shut.